this is getting deep here and like emotional, but like there are times where if I'm watching a movie or there is usually it's something to do with my daughter, and like that'll make me like tear up and cry. And I'm not like ashamed of that in any means. And I feel like there's a lot of men who are out there thinking that they have to act tough because like, oh, I'm a macho man, right? I'm not going to cry. And it's like, well, yeah, you think that because you've never really done anything with your life that makes you feel like you're tough. And it's like, I don't have anything to prove. So I don't
fake it till you make it
about something. And I've talked to buddies about that, and they're like, yeah, man, like I've seen some shit. And I'm like, I know you have. And if you got to fucking cry about that, like do it. That's fine. Somebody's going to tell you you're less of a man. Like, I know what you've done.
Hey, I'm going to tell you right now, Jordan, man. My goal in life is to be a stay at home dad. I mean, literally, like if my wife can go out there and crush it and I can be the stay at home dad, like, fuck yeah, kids, you know what we're doing today? Like, it's going to be field trip and out in the forest.
All right. Well, you think that until your wife's like, have they eaten? Have you done this? You think your wife's going to stop being a wife because she's working? Let me just dispel you on that right now.
They're all alive. We're good.
That's pretty funny. Have they eaten? I could just hear what's going on in Jordan's household. Have the children eaten today?
Like, I've eaten, so clearly they have. Like, I'm not going to go without eating. So, trust me. If I'm eating, I'm going to be like, hey, you want some of this? Yeah.
It's quite the assumption. There you go. Just because you're eating that they're eating.
Especially if you're, like, going fishing with them and then cooking up some fresh caught fish, dude. Like, that'd be a good stay-at-home dad, like, learning development experience right there.
Dude, I went fishing last weekend. We were crushing it. We fucked up some fish. 21 yellow snapper, 1 mangrove snapper.
Dang. Out real fishing out in the ocean, huh?
Sushi going on there, huh?
Yep. Ooh.
He's out with his billionaire buddies from Bohemian Grove.
It's inside that was California. That's not Florida, is it? For God's sakes.
It's California.
Yeah, look at him. Look at him changing his location. Look, he looks like he's in the fucking Matrix. Like, he's trying to disguise where he's at.
Yeah,
meanwhile, you go to the outside of his house. His neighbors see, like, a boarded up room with, like, weird lights. And they're like, what the fuck's going on?
No, for real. That's a for real thing. Because, like, the front of my house, like, there's blackout on the two of the windows where my office is at. Right behind this wall right here.
They're like, these motherfuckers just moved totally in. Looks they have like, a murder room set up already.
Well, in the audience, I don't think the audience has gotten to see what it looked like red when you look like Senator Palpatine sitting up on your throne over there, too.
Yeah.
It's either Bohemian Grove or Senator Palpatine so far. Both great possibilities, Alex, got to say.
You should have it, like, change colors, like, just automatically. Change colors. See how it – or you need, like, mood lighting. As you start to get, like, deeper in thought, it turns, like, purple. When you get excited, it turns, like, orange.
Oh, boy. Here we go. It's going to get weird.
Oh, we've already missed that boat. Weird was good.
It was a good live. Start off going live, right as Jordan says, we're gonna get a little emotional here. So like we're already into the weird territory.
Yeah, that actually wasn't broadcast. We were not live when he got into that story. It was more like when I picked up with like I'm gonna be a stay at home dad at some point.
And oh, okay.
Got about 10 years left on that one, maybe.
Well, damn. He's like, I was trying to make that one.
I saw that red light turn on, and I was like, all right, let's give him the good stuff.
been holding back for 2 weeks. He's ready.
I got 2 weeks of built-up shows in
here. He's like, dude, I freaking lit a candle. Barry White was playing. Dude. Had a glass of wine poured.
Yes.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man.
Really do.
You said you couldn't find any, and I was like, I'm pretty sure I can find some of this.
Dude, I'll tell you what, man. I'm about to get stocked up on this. There was another vet that's up there in the neighborhood now, I think, of Buffalo Trace, like right down the road, dude, obviously.
Get stocked up on it. Like this dollar for dollar, sat for sat, this is the best stuff you can buy. It's like 25. We're going to all be looking back and be like, remember when you could buy Buffalo Trace for $35? And because this stuff is good, I can't believe they're still selling it for so cheap and they haven't started marketing it. So when I go, dude, I'm like, two bottles, please.
that's what this was when it first came out. Nobody knew about it. Yep. It was like 20 something bucks for a bottle.
What's that now?
Oh,
130. I'm not saying that's what I'm paying. No, that wasn't. No, but there are places that will sell that for 130 easy. And wow. When I was in Florida, I went and picked up. They did this.
The Gary V of liquor.
They did like a what is it called? Like each Jordan liquor store gets their allotment. They did a sale on their allotment. And they sold everything for like MSRP, and you could get Eagle Rare. You had to be one of the first two or three people in the door to buy it because they only had two or three bottles. But they sold it for, I want to say it was like $35.99. Like that's how much liquor stores are buying that for. Like the distillery is not $35.99. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And places will sell it for like 130, or this one will, I'll tell everybody else. I don't want to let Shane know that it was $80, but like, that's a good deal for Eagle Rare. Like $80 for Eagle Rare. That's pretty good. If you can even fucking find it.
That's the thing, is you can't find it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they knew they had something pretty hot on their hands, I think probably about 5 years ago. And at that point, they were just like,
now you got to fight the resistance to drink it.
We're going to make that
drink the shit.
We're going to make it scarce is what we're going to do.
Well, that's what I'm saying about Buffalo Trace. Like prices are low, buy and hodl. Okay.
So Randy,
the market.
Yeah, man.
Randy, are you going to be okay after this?
Oh, yeah. I'll be good, man.
Potential serious hit to your reputation doing this show with us.
I don't have a reputation.
All right. So Dr. Nick Amato. It's got to be Nick.
Nick Amato.
He's saying Cedar Ridge is better. I've never even heard of Cedar Ridge.
Yeah.
Oh, Cedar Ridge is pretty damn good.
Where's it out of? Is it even out of Kentucky?
I think it should be out of Iowa. I think.
It's got to be Utah.
Iowa. Okay. Let me tell you the last time I saw even something bourbon from Iowa. Chirp, chirp,
chirp, chirp. Well, we got Mike. I mean, let's be.
Well, know, okay, I meant bourbon, but yes. Mike is a very well aged, 32-year-old bottle of bourbon.
Don't dox me, bro.
I don't know if that's right. Was that? I mean, you doxed yourself. Right.
I'm looking up. I want to confirm whether Cedar Ridge is from Iowa or not, because it's something I should know.
But you've had it a few times then.
Oh, I've had it a lot. It is very good.
A lot. Like I had a
problem. That sounds a lot more negative than it should, but I've had quite a bit of Cedar Ridge.
Did you guys hear that Krugman is saying that the loss of purchasing power, aka inflation, is actually a hoax? This is not a real thing that all of us are experiencing. Hey,
don't believe your own eyes, man. What are you
He's
doing?
Been all over the news last week or so.
Trust the science.
Chief propagandist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's, Cedar
it's
Ridge.
It's basically straight gaslighting.
It is out of Iowa, by the way.
Yeah.
How many people are actually like they're going to believe that? They're really going to believe that it's not a real thing.
Well, there's a lot of idiots that are going to believe. Now, here's the thing: is that there's a lot of people who do really well in the fiat sense. They're going to agree with them. They're going to be like, "Yeah, I'm fine. What are you talking about?"
Mm-hmm. Dude, you don't know.
There's also the cohort that's going to believe it because they want to believe it because they have to. Otherwise, they'll go into some mental death spiral, like catastrophic break. You know what I mean?
I think the level of inflation, like the people that it's affecting, is so high up the economic food chain of people that are really being affected by it and are realizing, like people that make a lot of money, like upper six figures, they notice it and they're very well aware that, wow, I'm overpaying for a lot of things. It may not be till you're getting to like the millionaire class. And I'm not talking about somebody making like 1 to 2 million a year. They're probably like still like noticing it. Like
a millionaire.
Yeah. At least, or maybe like upper getting close to 10 million. Like,
yeah.
People that are making high six figures are noticing the inflation, and that should, that I feel like that is what is unusual compared to past times. Now, granted, that's because the nominal, that's because of inflation. Like that's why there's more people just in that level. You know, that used to be somebody that was maybe making 250, 300,000. Like that's just where the new mark is at, right? Like the new high water level. And that's going to affect people. Like the numbers are coming, I would say, more to our side of like, they're not going to believe that shit. Like you have to be pretty fucking high up on the economic food chain to think that inflation is not real.
You got to be brave
and or stupid.
You got to be
brave. Yeah.
Absolutely.
That motherfucker is not real.
And with that, let's go. Welcome to Bitcoin Veterans, everybody. I'm Shane. We got Jordan back from hiatus. He's been traveling the world, just not being here. We got Mike Hobart. We got Alex Stanzik. We are minus one Gabe Lohr tonight, but we are plus one Randy Kelly. He is a Navy SEAL. He's another combat vet, extremely successful businessman, a neighbor of mine out here on the East Coast. And man, we are absolutely delighted to have you. How are you, Randy?
Oh man, I'm doing great. Glad to be here. That was a good introduction, by the way. That piece is pretty good, man.
Thanks. I really appreciate that. These guys gave me all the photographs and everything that I needed to throw that little thing together. And
we created a dossier for you, is what he's saying.
Shane is a great hype man.
Yeah, let's go. The good fucking veterans.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody that's out there, we are running live on Twitter Spaces, YouTube, Facebook. And that's, I think, about it. This is also available on Fountain FM. If you don't know about Fountain, go listen on Fountain, for God's sakes. If you're a Bitcoiner, you know about Fountain. You earn sats. We earn sats. You can make comments. We'll read them. It is everywhere. We do this mostly on Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. We've actually been pretty consistent without Jordan around. So
about to fuck that up.
It's good to have everybody back. You know, we're gonna have a really pretty amazing conversation tonight. I did leave out that Randy is already a Bitcoiner. I think you got a Bitcoin shirt on, don't you, tonight?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, it's one of the OG Bitcoin shirts here.
That is well worn, well loved.
He's got the faded one.
I like it. So you were a SEAL until, well, I think everybody's always a SEAL, just like most times everybody's always a Marine. You were a SEAL until 2005, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So did you get to go and you did a couple of deployments, one obviously to Iraq, I believe, and then some other theaters as well. Were you retiring at that time, just ready to go? Or was it one of those things where it was kind of like a sad, like, I'll see you later?
Well, it's one of those things. Most guys in the military, I mean, especially if you're deploying a lot, they look at that when they get to that 10-year point, it's either do I stay in for the 20 or do I get out and seek that other career, right? And that's where I was. And in my case, I had two young kids at home. The Iraq war was pumping hard. And I was going, I actually went to Iraq five separate times in 2 years. My deployments were short deployments. We can get into that a little bit later, but they were short deployments. And then, so trying to raise two young kids at that time, I had to make the call, right? So I love the job. It was the best job I ever had. It was time to take, you know, put my family first. So that's why I got out in 05. Yeah.
If you don't mind me chiming in with a question, we could probably use it as a segue into getting into some of that military experience, Randy. Mm-hmm. What took you into, because I looked at your LinkedIn as far as like the, what's the name of your current, it's Mech something. right?
Fort Mac.
Yes, I'm sorry for not remembering that. What got you into specifically making that company? Because like your guys' website has some very interesting stuff as far as like drone, what looked like AR/VR equipment, like maybe some like armor style product. Like, what exactly are you guys doing with that? Whatever you're comfortable talking about. And then, like, how, what brought you there from the military?
Well, good question, good segue. So right after 9/11, military realized that we weren't that good at finding the bad guy so much anymore. We had done that, obviously back in Vietnam, but finding the bad guys, we're good at finishing them, right? But finding them was a whole nother thing. So after 9/11, the Special Operations Command put a lot of effort into that piece, finding out where the bad guys where they were and how we could find them and then eventually do something with them. So I was a part of that because I was a sniper and into the technology of surveillance and all that stuff. We didn't have the drones back in, 02, 03, 04, but we got them pretty quick. So SEAL teams were pretty quick. At the time they were just, hey, let's take this mission and go out there and find these bad guys. So, they grabbed a few of us to go to all these different places to figure out how other people did it. And we brought those techniques and that technology back to the special operations. And so that was one of the reasons I went to Iraq 5 times, but they were short trips. So I was teaching the guys, getting them all spun up on how to go find these bad guys. But I still had to make that decision to get out from my family. So immediately I set up a business to support special operations. I did technology and training. I built that up into probably about a $6 million business until we stopped hunting bad guys when a certain president was sworn in 2010. So when that happened, my business took a dive and I had to pivot really quick, and I just went on to other businesses. Since 2000, I guess about 2011, I've had 7 different businesses. Some I've sold, some I've done well, some I've done great, some just crashed and burned. And that's what happens when you try a lot. And so, I've had a weird career, if you call it that. So,
hey, we're all about weird careers here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Weird means interesting. Yeah. And interesting means
weird
fun,
is good.
So. Do you mind if I ask, so like my next point of curiosity is what kinds of tricks did you learn when you were gathering this kind of intel on individuals? Because I'm sure that probably fed into partially the psychological aspect of your book Driven, which Jordan was talking about earlier.
Trying to think about how to answer this. So there was a few folks around in the early 2000s who still had the experiences of going to find and figure out where all these bad guys are, trace out the networks and stuff like that. Those are the types of people I visited and went to courses. Some of them were overseas. Like, for example, one I can talk about is the Brits. They had been dealing with the problems up in Northern Ireland. How did they deal with it? So they gave us a lot of their training, and we brought a lot of that stuff back.
What Randy is trying to say is he can't tell you anything about the cool shit that you want to know.
I picked up on that.
Or how do I say this delicately?
Shut the fuck up.
No, these are the questions that we all want to answer, right?
Because yeah, it's
super interesting shit.
Yeah,
and it ties into the book. And in the book that he's referencing, it's a book a psychologist and I worked together on called Driven. It's about the genetics of what makes us tick. Us being the ADHD mofos that go out there and just do crazy stuff. And it's only about 10 to 20% of the population. And pretty much all of special operations, most people in the military are very much this way. Most of the rest of the world isn't. They don't get it. We call them farmers. That's not a bad thing. We need farmers. Like, for example, don't ask me to do taxes because that's a job I won't do. But, you know, get out there and start a business, get it going, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I'll get that going. So the point is hunters versus farmers. There's a place for both of them in this world. We need them both. We can talk a little bit more about that. But it ties in directly on with that.
I've asked my questions for now, fellas. Like, whatever you got, I'm not going to interrupt for a couple minutes.
I'm actually kind of curious. I mean, the psychology behind the guys, especially in special operations, you know, you experience it firsthand and you don't really understand what you're experiencing. But part of it is, you know, this very, it's not even so much machismo as I think it is this desire not to be last. They're obviously like, right. There are a lot of guys that are just absolute specimens of human beings. First and foremost, they have extremely high aptitudes. They're physical, you know, behemoths in terms of, you know, strength and stamina and just willpower and heart. And your statistic, 10 to 20% of what everybody in special ops.
Just the world population. Yeah.
That seems incredibly high. But
yeah,
I mean, it really does.
So let's back up a little bit.
Okay.
We've been studying science has been studying this problem with ADHD kind of people for decades. Way back when they called it the alcoholic syndrome or the alcoholic gene or something like that. So, but we've got 40 plus years of studying of genetics, of what makes people this way. I'm going to get a little geeky on you here for a second, but it's really interesting. There's these two genes that receive dopamine from our system. They're called the D1 receptors. And what happens is there's an allele or some type of malfunction that doesn't let us, I say us because I'm one of them, actually receive much of that dopamine. So we have to do other things to get more of that dopamine hit. So what normal people would do is watching TV and getting their excitement from TV. That's not enough for many of us. We have to go out and do, right? So there's one allele called a D2 means you are squirrel. I'm chasing that squirrel, right? A D4 can see the squirrel saying, I want to hunt that squirrel, and they have to think about how I'm going to do this. And they have a little bit more logical control over that situation. So most D4s, we call them explorers. They like to just go explore. Whereas D2s are just all over the damn place. Now there's some people that actually have both alleles and they're absolute messes. Here's the thing. is when we go down these rabbit holes, we get our dopamine and we're happy. Like, oh, cool. I went fishing. I went hunting. I went skydiving. I want this. I want, right. I did all these things. Whereas a normal farmer would be like, what the hell? You're a nut. Right.
Yep.
So
there's something wrong with you guys.
Yes.
It feels so good after you've been down a rabbit hole for like 2 hours.
You're just like, oh,
so I've learned so much.
So you want to hear something fun is from now on, put your rabbit hole on your schedule. Say, I'm going hunting on Friday. Ooh. I'm going fishing on Friday. I'm going skydiving, whatever it is, on Friday. Put it on the schedule. Rabbit
hole time.
And guess what? And guess what you're going to do? You're going to do all the stupid crap you got to do. And you're like, masonry. I'm doing masonry right now, which is not fun. I'll do that during the week because I'm happy because guess what? Opening season is on Saturday here in Tennessee. And I'm going out with my bow because it's on the schedule. So I can. So the point is, put it on the schedule. Make sure your wife understands that you need this, right?
This is my rabbit hole time.
I was going to say, that's what this is. This is on the schedule. The wife knows I need this.
Same thing. Now there's one more piece to this us hunters, we need our wolf pack. Behind me here, you see a little wolf, right? We can't be lone wolves going down these rabbit holes. We need our friends. We need our brothers that we can believe in. And that is why the teams were so much fun for everybody who was in it, because we are a wolf pack and we don't tolerate weakness, right? And it's just a natural innate thing. And you attack that weakness to make that other guy stronger. So the pack is stronger.
Yep.
So the point is we hunters need our wolf pack no matter what. So if you're moving or something like that, like I just moved, I got to build up my wolf pack and get out and do stuff with them.
Man, this just kind of blew my mind just now. As I said earlier, you know, I've been listening to this book all day, like while I did stuff around the house and while I've been running errands and doing crap. You know, we started off the show, I'm a stay-at-home dad. Yeah, well, I get shit done, okay? So I'm listening to this book, and I'm just so, like, in my head about all of this stuff. And everything you just said, like, back on being in the wolf pack, like, being in the team, like, that, you know, that was great. Well, one of the, like, the thing that came to mind, it wasn't even really a good experience, but when I went to Syria, we had a weird situation where my team was running split ops and half of my team was in Syria and I was with the other half in Turkey, and we were doing this stupid bullshit mission that just sucked. And we're like, we want to get to fucking Syria, right? So like my whole strategy for everything we did in Turkey was just to like get the fuck out of Turkey. So after 3 months, we basically got ourselves out of there. We handed off our mission to like a civil affairs team and we joined up with everybody. Well, when I got there, the way my command looked at it was like, oh, we got a free like half a team that we weren't even expecting. So they put me and half my team in with the AOB, which is like, this is the company level. Like this is literally the B team, like where the word the B team comes from. They put us in there to like augment them, and it sucked. But at the same time, like as I was making the trip from Turkey, we fly into Iraq, we're meeting up with guys we're switching out with. I'm hearing all these like horror. I'm hearing from my team sergeant who's in Syria, and I'm hearing all these like horror stories of like what our company commander is doing there, and like how he's like firing good people and he's just like being a dick. And so I get dropped into this situation. Like that seems like it's a pretty toxic situation. I'm not with my fucking team. It sucks. It's not a situation you want. But your story and how you said you were having to find like the wolf pack and everything I listened to while listening to the book today made me realize like it was kind of me and my commander squaring off as like the alpha male or whatever, the alpha of the wolf pack. And it was kind of like, you know, it's the military. He's the commander. He's the alpha. But I had to come in there and try to figure out, like, how do I defuse the alpha and stop him from, like, pissing off the whole wolf pack and get the wolf pack under control. And I never would have looked at that deployment from that perspective if I hadn't listened to the book all day and you hadn't kind of told that story of what you feel like when you were in the wolf. So I found like, even though I was in this shitty mission and I wasn't really with my team, I found the thing that kind of, I guess, maybe got my dopamine hit. Like, I rallied the wolf pack and we fucking got on it. And we got on a new mission.
Yeah. And we become our best when we're in that wolf pack team, too. I mean, think about when you, let's say you go into Pacific Bitcoin or something like that, and you know you're going to meet up, you're going to get your shit together. You're going to learn, you're going to practice, you're going to know what you're talking about. The same thing if you're going out to the range or going out hunt. I mean, you, the iron sharpens iron, but it's at a deep level that you don't want to screw with your pack, right? So that's an important piece too.
All right, real quick. Speaking of range time, do you still get out to the range, Randy? You still do PP stuff?
Now that I'm in Tennessee, I've pulled my guns out of deep storage underneath the ocean yes.
Are you coming to Bitcoin 2024
in Nashville?
Nashville.
I am thinking hard about it.
For sure. Okay. This is what we want you to seriously consider at this moment in time is we're going to be doing a range day. Hmm. And we're bringing a bunch of dudes out there, a bunch of us dudes, and then we're inviting everybody else that wants to come. And Jordan is hooking us up with an amazing range where we can go basically do what we want. Right, Jordan?
Well, I mean, hold on. It's not built yet, but I'm working with the private landowner to get it.
All right. Yeah. So we'd love to, if you want to, Randy, we'd love to have you out there. That'd be a great day.
I'd love to get out there and shoot. Yeah.
Cool.
On the subject, the fact that you started pulling out the fact that you're also a bow hunter, man. How long you been bow hunting? What do you shoot? And, you know, like the whole, you know, I guess tribal thing with this bow hunting club.
All right. So, I haven't been to bow hunting. Right. This is actually my first year bow hunting. Actually, ooh. I take that back. I went once before, but in California, I definitely didn't harder out there. Yeah. So, no, this is my first year bow hunting. Up till now, I've always been a long gun kind of guy. So,
well, welcome to the East Coast. If you want to, you know, bounce anything off, and maybe take a trip down here to North Georgia, you know, we've got a lot of the same type of terrain and everything out here. This is one of the most fun places to hunt bow because of the cover. And, you know, you're mm-hmm. not taking anything. I mean, if you got a 40 yard shot, you know, it's almost too good to be true. You know what I mean? In terms of, you know, trying to test how good your skills are down here. But the really cool thing I think about Kentucky and Tennessee now is you guys have got elk in Tennessee in some places.
That's correct. That's correct.
Especially mm-hmm. up there on the eastern side. So that's something, I don't know, man. I'm a little jealous of that. We're trying to get some down here in North Georgia.
Well, I've got 23 acres here, and every day there's deer, turkey, occasionally bear. So I don't have to go too far.
Hey, you keep that bear population down. That's what's bringing in the elk. So
that's right.
Okay, a couple of other things. In your bio that wasn't mentioned yet, you are a wilderness survival instructor and a warfare tactics instructor. Will you talk to us a little bit about that?
Oh, okay, sure. So, like I said, I don't have a career mission. I have a career adventure. That's my life. So, I go down rabbit holes that I've always wanted to go down. I was able to make a pretty good chunk of money off a couple of my businesses. So, I'm not in dire straits to just go out and make money. So I can do things I want to do. So one of the things I did do, early 2012 and, for about 4 or 5 years was I was teaching, warfare tactics, to not only military, but, also civilians, just, preparedness kind of stuff without getting crazy about it. But as best I could out in California, I did that for quite a
while. They let you do those kind of things in California?
Yeah.
You don't tell him, well, Alex.
I would. So I figured out how to do it. Let's put it that way. So I had multiple. I had multiple ranges, and when one was shut down because of EPA or whatever, I'd go to the other one. And so I was able to make it happen without doing anything illegal.
He was doing leadership training, Alex.
Okay.
Yeah. And then so on the wilderness survival, that's always just been one of my hobbies, and I never thought I'd be able to do it for a job. I was, you know, in the teams, there was like three of us who are really good at like wilderness survival. Like three of us. SEALs are not good for this kind of stuff. I mean, you'd be surprised. We can go
support, right? SEALs get a lot of support.
Yeah. So, but there was about three of us who were good at this stuff. And I never thought much about it until this the SEER school came was broken out from the Navy and SEALs did their own SEER school. So for the last 3 years, I've been teaching SEER out on the West Coast. My specialty was wilderness survival, but I still have to do all the interrogations and stuff like that. That was kind of fun.
Were you the Russian interrogus?
I was one of the few who spoke Russian. Yes,
I knew it.
What's your what's your favorite interrogation story?
Grab rags, homo sex. This is what they. Oh God, they were always doing this. Ridiculous, motherfucker. I'm going to tell you right now, these guys on North Island are the. I mean, it is terrible and hysterical at the same time. And man,
yes,
when they still had Russian accents after we had already done deployments to Iraq, I was like, man, we really are fighting the last war, like they always said.
Exactly. So that was one of the reasons NSW or the Navy gave the SEALs their own course is because we're like, hey, they're still doing Russian and it's not as tough, you know, for these SEALs. So we had to amp it up a little bit. We went back to Russian after going al-jihadi for so long. And then so we got Russian gangster down pretty dang good. So, and I was one of the few who That's actually awesome. Spoke quite a bit of Russian.
There was still a lot of Russian going when I was going through around 13, 14. There was still a lot. It was kind of funny. It was like, oh, we're still, yeah, I guess we still need to learn Russian. And now it's like, oh, yeah, of course they were kept Russian going. They knew what they were planning.
Yeah.
You know, you get that ball rolling, man. It's hard to stop rolling. And what's even crazier is I was just thinking back to the other day when old Barack Obama was on a debate stage with Mitt Romney, and he said, hey, Mitt, the 1980s called, and they want their foreign policy back. And you're sitting there.
Yeah.
Wait a second. You guys.
That was a killer line at the time. Like, remember it that? Was. Like, I remember that. That was like a dagger. It was like, oh, yeah, dude, you're so out of touch.
I think it was an idiot. I think it looked like a dagger because the mainstream media tried to make it look like it was a dagger, you know? And reality, you were sitting there going like, no, man, like right now, geopolitically, this is actually a pretty good, you know, this is a pretty good question. But, you know, when you got the whole damn, you know, $1 trillion mainstream propaganda on your side, you know, they can make anything. The power of suggestion is very real with those people. And they're like, oh, yeah, this is what he said. This is the greatest line ever.
Not to mention, it's like normies, not a whole lot of normies are probably, at least in America, are very aware that a lot of those countries, like the citizens also speak Russian. So it's like, it's still going to like help you out.
I worked in Kazakhstan in the oil and gas for about 2 years. And that's where my Russian came.
Oh, I bet.
Of course they speak Kazakh too, but you know, they all speak Russian too. So
yeah, they'll speak like seven languages, won't they? Like you're going to have some overlap with a lot of areas.
Yeah.
So well, like, I have a question then. Oh, okay. Go ahead, Jordan.
No, you have an actual question. Mine was literally going to start with, I have a tangent. Go ahead, Mike.
Randy, I was going to ask you, do you have any opinions or takes on what's going on right now? Like particularly with geopolitically with the last couple of years to consider. That's a good start. That's a good start.
That's a big loaded right question. Fire.
Just stick them right in there. Hey, you want to come on our show and get deep asked like the worst questions ever?
Put it all no, out these there, are the right best. Away. These are the best questions ever because
they are. Responses. They are.
You know, the truth is, you need to go to the root cause, right? Of what, why we see what we see. There's a whole lot of things I'm not good at, but what I'm pretty dang good at is I'm a good observer. I observe, I understand things. I ask questions about what's going on. I stay pretty involved in what's happening in the world. And, you know, I'm pretty good at reading between the lines, and obviously, this world is broke, man. It's right on the cusp of going into craziness. And I saw this years ago, but it's just a matter of time before it even gets worse. And I mean, gosh, I don't know where to take this. I don't know if I want to go to geopolitical, but basically, you know, the U.S. is having a hard time maintaining its hegemony, right?
Yep.
We got China and Russia vying for that peace. And then a lot of people would just want to bring down Western values. So, what does that mean? It's gonna rot within first, probably. You guys probably know that. And and of course, that one of the things I'm excited about Bitcoin is that it holds that potential to actually get off that fiat type mindset that gives us that short time horizon of what we care about. I don't know. I just think it's going to get worse before it ever gets better.
I can't disagree. I have some more questions, guys. Like, if you have any, like, chime in. Otherwise, I want to keep rolling with them.
Go for it, Brian.
I got one. I want to dig in on this last one. When you say it's going to get worse before it gets better, let's dig in just a little bit.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's define what that means to you. How much worse does it look like?
We heard you were a SEER instructor and you're now under interrogation.
Here's the thing. All right. There's a lot of people, farmers, whatever you want to call them, they don't like thinking about this kind of stuff. And in fact, these kind of conversations make them very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm, right. Yeah. However, there are a bunch of people out there who like want to know because they want to be better prepared. So let's, if you don't mind, let's dig into that a little bit. Like, where do you think this is going in the next 5-10 years? And what should people be focusing on?
All right. So my thinking on this has changed. I've been sitting with this problem for at least 12 to 15 years. Ever since I got out of Iraq and I could see the tactics we were using there on changing population, changing hearts and minds and that kind of stuff. Then I come home and I see that same stuff being used here. I've been sitting with this problem for a long time, and my thinking has evolved there's nobody in control. There's no Illuminati. There's people who want to be. There's people who want total control, but there are tons of people who have different kinds of power, military power, financial power, discursive power, all these different types of power. And they're fighting for ultimate power, but they're humans. They can't do it. Their brains can't work that well. they can't organize that well. They have no morals to keep them together. So what we're going to see is pockets. We're going to see balkanization of the world. We're going to see groups splinter off. We're going to see what used to be large countries like the United States, Russia, and stuff like that break out into small groups, a la India, Pakistan, right? So I think that's what's going to happen. And there's going to be conflict trying to keep them together or trying to consolidate those powers. But I, as information travels at the speed of light now, it's too hard to consolidate those types of powers. So, yes, it's going to be economic chaos. It's going to be military chaos. It's going to be people are just going to tear down because they want to build up in their own way. So it's ideologies, it's philosophies on monetary systems. I know those are general words, but it's pretty ugly.
Everything you said.
So this concept of citadels that Bitcoiners talk about all the time. This is like this could be a thing, you think, moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you actually want to be a part of one of these. There's a really good question here, and I'm going to put it on the screen, and then I'm going to ask it in a different way. The real question is, when peak clown world? And I love the wording in this, but in terms of like in a real world application, I think this actually is a really good question when asked in terms of, you know, your precipice. What are your defining events for real balkanization? When does this start to turn, and when do you start to see things like citadels, fraction, you know, US fractions of I was about to say USSR, of Russia, you know, which has already been balkanized quite a few times. Eastern, you know, Europe has been balkanized God knows how many times. Is this the reset we need, and what's gonna precipitate this?
So part, I thought for sure I knew this maybe 10 years ago. I thought for sure it would be political political problems here in the United States, between, you know, left and right. That's what I thought it would be 10 years ago. I threw all that out the window. I can't answer when. I don't think anybody can really answer when.
Yeah, I'm not really asking for when. I'm talking about like
what are the events?
Yeah,
what are the events?
What happens?
Well, think about just the United States here. We've already bifurcated the United States so much. You have people on either side of the spectrum. I'm saying there's two, but there's not two. There's more than two now, but it's just breaking apart. There's no trust in the system anymore.
Can I just interject real quick on what to answer the question of what are some of the signs that we're maybe in this bifurcated, non-kinetic, like global war, civil war situation? Is, I don't know, you might see things like chemical spills, overhead aerial surveillance, i.e. spy balloons. You might see things in the media that compared Western sources versus Eastern sources give conflicting opinions on a certain war going on that doesn't involve any of them,
mm-hmm. or economic a fraction warfare.
Of them. You said something earlier, you mentioned like, yeah, we all should have seen that China and Russia were still threats. Like they were always threats. They never went away. And you said something while you were talking about the competition for hegemony, is that a lot of times when people discuss China and Russia as threats, they view it like, oh, that means they're just trying to go to war. And it's like, no, in a lot of sense, it's the competition for economic control of the world, right? Mm-hmm. And that's something that we all, as like Bitcoiners, discuss a lot, is like the economy of the world, like local, macro, all this stuff, right? And really, like, that's kind of what's being competed over, is the economic control of the world. Like,
bingo, because it all stems from like the economy. You can't have a military without a strong economy. You can't stipulate geopolitical strength without some kind of economic incentive. You got to have the stick and the carrot.
Yeah, and to that point, I think, you know, when you start to what's been compromised and destroyed is trust. This idea that, you know, these institutions, probably the best thing for everybody is these government, bureaucratic, banking, you know, MIC institutions have all been exposed for, you know, what they are, for, you know, for even a lot of the farmers, but definitely, I think, you know, a lot of the fighters or whatever we are in this whole
thing. The driven.
And to see that this is now starting to bleed over, I think this is our biggest problem, is a trust issue, where this lack of trust in institutions is now bleeding into your fellow man. And this is why I say this, because like 99.9 plus percent of human beings don't do anything to anybody else on a daily basis that, you know, is a harmful act. It's not rape. It's not murder.
Well, they don't have the desire to.
Yeah, there's no desire. A lot of people don't have a capacity for that in the first place, yeah. Right? And so, but the idea that, you know, you can't trust anybody, even people that are trying to help you. I mean, you look at the Bitcoin space and you see this all the time. You see, you know, you've got maybe 12-15% adoption of Bitcoin around the world right now. And as we're speeding towards hyper Bitcoinization, the people that have been in it the longest are sometimes the most heavily ridiculed, because the people that see it offering them a solution, they're weary. They don't trust a damn thing. And that's where I think, that healing has to happen quickly. And I hope, you know, the Bitcoin community, especially, you know, the veteran community, can start to really start to stand out and stand up and get together and start to join, where we're not doing this in a vacuum. We're not doing this alone. This is more of a mainstream, like, wow, man, you got a bunch of veterans who trust this, guys, you know, from every spectrum, that go, dude, those are a bunch of alphas. They haven't lost, you know, the narrative on any of this kind of stuff ever, right? They have been stone cold ever since the day I met them when they were little kids, and, you know, have lived their lives with integrity. They have raised incredible families. They've got, you know, good communities that they've helped to lift up around them, businesses, you name it. And you start to see this come together. And that's, I think that is going to be one of the most critical pieces for the better type of Balkanization that I think is long overdue to begin with.
Yes. but that also makes us a target. Think about that for a second. I mean, it also makes us a target. If any source of power, if it's integrity of yourself and your family and community, it becomes a target for those people if you're not under somebody else's control. And just look at CBDCs. They are an example. I mean, why would a government want that? There's only one reason: they want total control. Hmm.
As far as military trainer adversarial thinking, like, you can't trust any individual or entity that wants that, right? Like, you don't trust the individual that wants to be king. You trust the individual that doesn't want to be king.
Yeah, either if it's stupidity or if it's malevolence, you know. Yeah. Either way, you don't want to trust them.
Yeah, both of them result in you getting screwed.
Yeah.
So, I'm curious. I'm sure everybody else is. What is your story that brought you into Bitcoin?
2015. I was in a MBA program at Thunderbird. It's global management. So every class had an international aspect to it. Really good program. During our international finance course, I did worked on a project on cross-border flows, and I was just shocked at the amount of remittances that were going across the world, and I just thought it was really interesting. And then somebody brought up the point that, hey, Bitcoin might be the new method for this to happen. So I went down a Bitcoin rabbit hole, and I thought it was just the coolest way to be able to transfer money back and forth, A to B, without, you know, Wells Fargo charging $100 every time they want to send money home or something like that. And so I bought my first $50 back when Bitcoin was $225.
Nice.
And
he said that but shirt was old.
Look at his shirt.
Yeah,
are you serious? The thing's been washed about
proof
8 billion
of work.
And so I never thought that it would, you know, be the answer to so many other possible problems. So I, you know, over the years I just continued to buy a little bit here and there. I thought it was just a little bit, but it's turned out to be so, pretty good now.
Say that again.
I have.
And let me finish. During the block size wars and all that stuff, I just sat back like, this thing might die. I don't know. No idea what was going to happen. I just held on to it. And then it was just probably about 2 or 3 years ago, I started just hearing these rumblings that people were just talking about what Bitcoin really is. And, my undergraduate major was economics. So, they started talking about it in this economic context. And so I dug a little bit deeper and looked around, and I saw this really cool podcast called Bitcoin Cafe. And I started listening to that again. And I was like, wow, there's so much more to this. That's kind of my story. Well, and
I'm really glad that you cut me off and finished that story, because that dovetailed right into what I was going to ask, is that when you first bought Bitcoin, as we've all said, like, you're a freaking OG, how much of it was you heard about this new, like, investment type thing and, like, moved in? And how much is it that you knew economics beforehand? You said you studied it. Like, for me, I had to learn about economics before Bitcoin would have ever made sense to me. But I can't imagine coming from it from, like, maybe a different perspective of, like, oh, this just seems cool, let me check it out. And that teaches you about economics. So where were you on that?
So even when I was studying it in college, when I was studying Bitcoin in my MBA program, I didn't understand how different it was. I still had fiat mentality, right? Because that was my economic background.
Studied economics, you are actually probably harder to get to for most of society. People that, like, mm-hmm. are taught economics are the hardest people to orange pill.
So even before that time, I was starting to study a little bit more on Austrian economics, right?
Okay.
So I was like, hey, Keynesian economics stuff, this makes no sense. And then I started learning more about Hayek and a few of these other guys. And that's when, even during my MBA program, I was starting to stand up for the Austrian economics school. Even though I didn't make the connection between Bitcoin and Austrian economics until probably 2020 or something like that.
Hey, that's when it hit me. And I feel like after once it clicked, once I was like orange pilled, it was like, holy shit, how didn't I see this earlier? because I knew all this information. I just hadn't, like, the fucking neurons had not touched yet. And, you know, yeah. I'm a fucking retarded autist. So it took a little while. They're not quite touching. There they go. And so for like a retard like me, it took a little while for the neurons to touch. But no, that's interesting. Cause like there's this weird interconnection and you know, you hunted down networks of terrorists. Like mm-hmm. that was your job. And so as I look at this, because we'll probably get labeled terrorists, especially after this episode. I feel like there's this like perfect triangle of like libertarians, Austrian economics, and Bitcoin. That the people in all these circles, these three different networks, continue to talk to each other and amplify each other's message. And it's like congruently, they're all touching on like the deepest form of truth. If you connect those dots, it seems like all these motherfuckers are all talking about and everything they say is like fucking true and it all backs off of each other. So I kind of want you to put your red hat on and for just free advice. I know usually you charge for this, but you're going to give it to us for free. How would you attack a network that looked like that? Because that looks like fucking formidable to me. But I'm on the inside, like maybe I'm shaded. How would you attack a network like that?
So this is one of the things I really catches my interest is red hatting Bitcoin, right? Red hatting these citadels, red hatting any of these things that we hold dear, right? That is. Basically, like you just said, fundamental truths, right? There are truths out there. There are good things out there. And some people want to break those things down because that is a type of power. So I don't think we do enough of that. Or maybe if people do, they keep it quiet on purpose. I love Bitcoin and I still hold that, hey, it can be taken down probably somewhere, somehow. I think the odds against it are enormous. But I've seen crazier things. So,
no, that's 100% accurate because a lot of people in the Bitcoin space want to act like, oh, it's impenetrable. Like no, we don't know yet. It's not that there is a vulnerability right now. We're all in that threat space. We all think about it like that. And it's like, no, it hasn't been proded and prodded. It's 14 years old. US
government been tested. It's been tested and it's come through pretty well. I don't know if that's providence or if that's just luck or it's just that strong. I'm not smart enough to answer those questions, but I do know this: it will be targeted at some point.
Yeah.
It will be probably harnessed at some point, a la Jason Lowry, right? Some of his concepts, and I hold those possibilities in my hand and kind of prep and kind of red cell myself. What would I do? What would I do if those kinds of things happened? Now. I'm still in Bitcoin. I still haven't sold anything for a reason because I think it's one of the coolest things around. That's happened in my lifetime.
Dude, that's awesome.
Okay, if you were talking to a veteran today, Randy, and they were curious about Bitcoin, they were like, we call it Bitcoin curious around here. If they were they were curious about Bitcoin. They're like, what is this thing? How would you go about telling them what it was?
So I'm problematic in that I'm a multi-thinker and I'm already thinking about, all right, how would I onboard this guy? Right. So I'm going in 10 different directions. So, I wouldn't go airy fairy. Hey, it's this, it's a solution to everybody's problems. What I would say, it is the soundest money that's ever been invented. And at this point, it's unbreakable. It is deflationary. And there's been nothing else that has ever been like that. At that point, that person should be curious about this anomaly. All right, this economic anomaly, and I would just push it that way, and then I would slowly begin to explain exactly what it is. I'm not the most technical guy, but I do understand kind of, you know, what it is and how it is. Obviously, I've been around it for long enough, but I would go the economic route. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, I think so.
You guys ever go out there when you're teaching people about Bitcoin, especially on the technical side, and show them like the, you know, Bitfeed Live and the mempool, and kind of show them like how things just work with visualizations, and have any response out of that?
I had to do that with one team guy that's super technical, and he understands technology really well. And I couldn't answer three out of four questions because he was that good, but I could point him in the right direction. And he did finally understand it, you know, on his own. But I think that's a very special person that has to be.
I have to agree with Randy on that. If I've tried to use those kinds of avenues, Shane, and it's usually scared them off because it's
overload.
You know what's ridiculous? You know that kills me because I had my my nephew here last weekend before. He's just turned 14. I mean, fresh last weekend, and when that happened, he came over here and started asking me about Bitcoin left and right. And he and my 12-year-old, I said, hey, you know what? If you were interested in this kind of stuff, come upstairs and I'll show you some things. Came up here, I threw it on to the big screen and showed him, you know, Bitfeed Live, and showed him how actually, you know, how it all works, like what you can discover in each one of those little blocks that's going on and how it, you know, transpires from one tenant block into a chain. And they were like, wow, that makes perfect sense. Like they just, yeah, obviously.
That's because you were talking to a 14-year-old. D2 and a D4 gene.
Yeah. Know your audience, right? Like that makes perfect sense for a 14-year-old. Yeah. But you got to know who you're talking to, right?
But let's face it. We're bait all the hook. 13, 14-year-old guys in older bodies, right?
Like, we are with way more information in our stupid fucking brains.
Yeah. Yeah. You gotta bait. I believe you got to bait the hook to suit the fish, essentially.
Yep.
So I know how to talk to 12-year-olds. That's great.
Apparently, that's really good at talking. Oh,
geez, that was well, the worst thing to ever say. That's going to get snipped out by me and retweeted by all me over the internet. I know how to that's talk to.
You know, it's a really good, like, not super technical way to introduce people. You guys should try this if you haven't done it. Have somebody install a moon wallet on their phone right there on the spot.
Oh yeah,
it takes 2 minutes.
I've done that.
And then bang, just shoot them sets, and it's like, oh my God.
Yeah,
yep,
yeah.
Well, like Shane, to the point of like it being sad that like showing them that aspect of Bitcoin scares them because it's overload. Like the stuff that like Randy was talking about with regards to like the current geopolitical situation, just trying to figure out what's going on. Like I've had dozens of people over the last few years, just they've explicitly asked me, because I would go on like these little, I would force them into these autistic rants where I'm just talking about how everything is broken and like getting into like the dollar and all this other stuff and incentives. And I've had dozens of people ask me, they're like, doesn't it make you uncomfortable learning all this stuff? And I'm like, no, what is wrong with you? Like there's no possible, or there's no more like responsible answer to that question than asking them what is legitimately wrong with you, because like that you like you're like that them asking that question tells me that they don't want to understand how their world is operating so they can best navigate it. That's a fundamental problem.
Yeah.
I mean, they're blue pilled, man. And that's at the end of the day, they're the guy. There's what is his name? Cypher? I mean, I don't know. He's like, yeah. I don't want to remember nothing. I want to put this thing in my mouth and I want it to taste like steak. And that's all I need out of this.
And he thinks somebody important is an actor.
I just want to interject real quick to say there are people out there that, yeah, they're blue pilled because the propaganda works. And so I used to be a blue pill person, right?
You didn't want to know?
I used to be a blue pill person, and I feel like, yeah, I could see how it like worked on people until they reached a certain point and like learned enough. So sometimes it's like, oh, these stupid fucking blue pill people. But like those are the people we got to reach at the same time. And is anyone else hearing crickets or cicadas?
Yeah, I don't know where that's coming from.
I am.
From. It's making me tired.
Oh, that might be me.
Yeah.
I'm not complaining.
Dude, I mean, that's awesome. I want to come stay in your house.
Yeah.
They've been crazy down here in Texas, I can tell you that. Like the loudest cicadas I've ever seen or heard. And I've grown up with them my entire life. And Texas has the loudest cicadas, that's for damn sure.
I don't know, North Georgia, I remember doing ranger school out there, and just usually you got to like you're on patrol and you're in the patrol base at night, just whispering to each other, and they were so fucking loud. It was like, dude, we could just have like a normal conversation out here in the woods. Like nobody can hear us. What?
You should see these things we have out here. I think they're European wasps or cicada killers. They are about 3 to 4 times the size of a regular wasp, and they've got this really interesting abdomen that's like yellow and reddish, and they fly. They don't fly during the day. You never see them during the day, but you turn on the light at night, especially this time of year, and there are literally hundreds, if not thousands of them that will just come and ping off the glass, and it's just like ding, 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 and you're just like, oh my God. They're not real aggressive or anything, you know, never had any problems with them, but man, I'll tell you what, the first time you see one of them, you're like, oh, the fucking murder hornets are here.
The first time I saw one down in Texas was actually during the day, and it was carrying a damn cicada. Like, it was flying with the cicada, carrying it off. I'm like, Jesus Christ, what is this thing?
Mike, those cicadas were probably fucking.
This is why people actually watch this show, is for gems of
wisdom. Jordan. Like Jordan pulls up. Jordan pulls drops.
Views. Yeah. Yeah.
Sure. Hey, just a quick shout out to everybody on Twitter Spaces. If you guys are out there, I mean, God, we got Lisa's out there, Old Fashioned's out there. We got DA is here, man. We are getting quite a crowd. We are in kind of that part of the show right now where if you have questions for anybody on the panel here, feel free to request, come up and ask. We'll put you on the air. You can ask damn near anything you want. I don't know if you'll get straight answers or bullshit. You'll definitely get one of the two. And we're happy to have you. This is also streaming, I guess, on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and Twitter Spaces. So like, subscribe, go out there and hit that notification bell so that you don't miss any of this kind of stuff. Really appreciate everybody who's showing up for these and spreading the word. Go out there, maybe retweet it once or twice. Really appreciate getting people in here. Obligatory.
So I have a question.
I guess it's streaming in those places. I'm not really sure.
I have a question for Randy that you guys actually, I think it was Alex who had the good idea. Randy, do you have, because I think Alex had actually tried asking earlier too, do you have like a favorite or one of many favorite military stories that you like to talk about, or like a good, like funny story?
Yeah, I got a good one for you.
And he had one in the holster ready to go because he's a fucking Navy SEAL.
Let's go.
All right. So those cicadas aren't too loud, are they?
Oh, we're good now.
All right, good. So, all right. So I'm going to tell this story. And if Jocko is listening, which I don't think he is, but he will probably laugh at this story. All right. So this is early 2004 Iraq. We're at one of our one of the teams is in Iraq. I get there and I'm teaching them how to do these skills and stuff to go out there and find the bad guys, right? Well, we find one of these bad guys, right? And we're like, all right, tonight we're going to go hit him. So we're going to load everybody up. And Randy, you're a team guy. Why don't you come with us? I mean, obviously, I'm not part of this team. So they had their own system and all this kind of stuff. But they're like, yeah, come on, you're an operator. You know, get your M4 and get on out there with us.
Get on the mission.
So I got on the mission. and I'm in the second Humvee and we're coming to this house. We're going to take down this whole house and catch this guy. And obviously if it goes kinetic, it goes kinetic. If not, hope not, whatever. So we got a helo above and we got actually an AC-130, this trip. So we got air assets, right? And we got about, I don't remember, something like 7 Humvees on the ground. Mm-hmm. I'm in the second Humvee.
What's an AC-130 for the civilians in the audience?
Okay, an AC-130 is a is a prop airplane with basically artillery poking out the side of it that can see anything. And a 105
round and a 40 mic on it.
Yeah. And something else. I don't remember what else. But and they can see really, really well. So if there's any squirters from the house.
People running away. People running out of the house as it gets attacked.
That's a squirter.
Yeah, they can tell us. So they're like, hey, Randy, you know, since you're not part of our normal team, we're just going to put you on outside security. I was like, okay, no big deal. That's perfect. I'm like, okay, this, you know, heading out with the boys. It's not my team, but, you know, whatever. I'm in the second Humvee, actually on the back step. All right. This Humvee actually has a 50 cal up top, a big gun up top. So I'm on the back step on the second Humvee. Well, we come into this compound and it has these lights just shining out, right? And obviously that's what you want to do if you're defending, right? But if you're taking the place down, you're like, okay, it's hard to see anything because we see these big bright lights coming, you know, coming down. And so the first Humvee comes in and it turns left and it goes this way. Second Humvee comes in, which is the one I'm on. It doesn't see a 6-foot ditch because it's just too bright. So we go down into the 6-foot ditch, probably going, I don't know, 30 miles an hour. And the Humvee goes down into the ditch, immediate stop. I am bounced from the back step into the 50 cal with my head. And you can actually see my old lump from it. That's my old lump. It actually cracked my helmet. My nods go flipping and flopping. And I land on the hood of the Humvee, just dazed and confused. Right, the Humvee is like this. They're like, "All right, get out, everybody, get out, get out, go, just run to your spots." Okay, so I'm start running to my spot. My night vision goggles are just doing this. Well, they're landing there. You know, they're tied off to my helmet, which is now cracked. Yep. So I'm moving over and I'm like, and I feel my ACOG, which is my scope on my M4. I feel my ACOG. I'm like, holy crap. It's like, it's wiggling, right?
It's better.
It's not supposed to wiggle. It's not supposed to wiggle.
Not even a little.
So I'm running to my spot and there's one of my teammates there. And he's like, hey, Randy, hey, your sniper, shoot out that light.
Oh no.
And I look at the light. I'm like, it's not a good idea, man. I was just in the wreck, man. I don't know if my gun's okay. He goes, come on, you're a sniper, shoot it out. All right. So I grab my M4. Now, at the time we were running our tracers for our first five rounds, right? First five rounds. That way everybody can see where you're shooting and the bad guys, right? So I shoot up. I hit the light, but I don't hit the light. I just hit the reflector. The light's only about this big, and it's about 20 yards away, right? And of course, my ACOG is all jacked up, so I miss, and my tracer round goes up into the sky. Of course, there's a C-130 up there, right? Oh, the C-130 is like, holy crap, we're taking fire over the radio.
That's higher.
Right, and so now my M4 is not silenced or anything like this. So Jocko's inside. He's leading the team, and he's like, "Oh, we're going from soft to hard, which means you know, no more nice guy. Everybody down." And so I do a second shot. Tracer goes up in the round. It took me four rounds before I ever hit that stupid thing because I was just watching where my bullet went because my scope was no longer any good. I finally knocked it out. The guy next to me goes, dude, I thought you were a sniper. I was like, my gun's jacked up, man. Of course, blood's running down my face because I cracked my helmet. He's like, are you all right? I was like, yeah, I think so. He's like, anyway, so I went to my spot, my corner, and I'm like, holy crap, I just embarrassed myself, you know, my whole team, whatever. Anyway, they take the guy down. We catch up and we get back in the Humvees. They pulled it out of the ditch. We get back home and it's debrief time. And Jocko gets up there and he goes, who the fuck was shooting a light and couldn't hit it? And everybody kind of looks around and I take a second. I'm like, maybe my friend will stand up for me. Nah, he didn't stand up. I did it. I owned up to it. He was like, oh, what the hell were you thinking? I was like, well, I told him a little bit of the story. He didn't want to hear it. He's like, just shut up. He's like, just sit down.
Who the fuck are you? Who put you on my team?
And so afterwards, I was actually able to tell him the story. And he just laughed. And he was like, all right, well, you know, next time, don't do that. So that was my first op with Jocko in Iraq.
That's a great story.
Oh shit.
Oh man.
The AC-130 part really wraps it all in together, right? I think.
Yeah, yeah. You can hear him over the radio like, I think we're taking fire.
Maybe.
I think that round came up.
It's pretty good.
That's a great story.
Oh man. Thank you for that.
Yeah, glad you're all right though, man. That's a serious thing to be in an accident coming off of a 6-foot cliff. And the reason I say that is because
he's been there.
We had a similar experience. I mean, the experiences vary a little bit. We were just on a training mission, right? We were out somewhere around El Centro. We were doing some desert patrol and IFABs. And for everybody that doesn't know what an IFAB is, it's the worst military vehicle that we were ever fucking given. Like a fucking 4-cylinder diesel with no windshield, no doors, room for about three guys with maybe 4 or 5 guys stuffed into it. So we're moving along. We've got, you know, a few teams moving, and we come up on this little escarpment. And, you know, for anybody that doesn't or hasn't been out in the desert, you know, you'll find ditches and you'll find little escarpments that are, you know, 3, 4, 6, 8 feet tall. And because we were the lead vehicle and there's kind of, you know, it's dusty, we stopped, but team two did not. And as they continued on, just feet around us and past us, you just saw, you know, everything that was in IR just go boom, boom, and then disappear into a cloud of fucking dust. And we're like, oh my god. And you know, all of a sudden you got beeps and squeaks coming over radio, you know, everybody, you know, like, hey, are you guys okay? Are you guys nobody's coming back in comms. And then, like, finally, you know, we got rid of, you know, the comms, and we just started yelling. We broke, you know, what we were
shitting. Are you okay?
You guys okay? And our buddy Mark yells back, "Only time will tell." So I really have a lot of empathy for you, but the taking fire is the icing on the cake in that story.
Right? That's pretty funny. Man.
And Jocko, you know, being the platoon, I guess.
Or Harley Ermey style. Who the fuck
was that? That's classic.
Oh, great, man. Story. This is what I've missed the last couple weeks. Sons of bitches.
Yep.
And the cool thing about, like, the veteran community is that, like, we just bring you guys on, and we all, like, I don't think anyone's going to get an interview like this, for better and for worse, mostly for worse. But damn, it's like being back in the unit and some of the best times with, you know, the boys, and just, like, shooting the shit.
What was the lesson learned here, Jordan, from your absence?
Don't leave. And that was another thing that I learned on vacation.
Like, what the fuck's wrong with you? Vacation.
My kid had a birthday. Okay.
Hey, when you're a stay-at-home dad with a baller wife, you do what she says. And when she says go on vacation, you're like, okay.
I had a 30-foot bounce house slide to go down. So fuck you and your stupid show it on Wednesday nights. Okay.
Sounds like a good time to me. But I guess, man, what are we at right now? Is it it's already past quarter after? Yeah, we're at 8:15 here on the East Coast. We usually wrap this show right around 8:30. Before we do that, we kind of go around the horn, some parting shots, stories, whatever you want to do. Randy, I want to make sure that everybody knows first and foremost how we can help you. And show them, if I can get this thing to work, show them your book. Let's see. Bam! It works. There is a great book out there that I can't wait to read. Jordan's already been most of the way through it. It is Driven, Understanding, and Harnessing the Genetic Gifts Shared by Entrepreneurs, Navy SEALs, Pro Athletes, and Maybe You. You can find this on Amazon, so I don't know where else you need to go, but Amazon,
you can find it everywhere
is there,
Barnes and Noble, whatever.
Yeah, but fantastic, you know, to have you on the show, Randy, and to have these amazing stories and make connections. What else can we do for you?
I don't have an answer for that.
We have an army behind us. People don't realize this yet, but, like, and I'm not even saying this necessarily hyperbolically. We have a platoon of men behind you and women.
Several platoons and growing.
Ready to like action some missions if you have them. Like, if you have something that if you could reach out to a platoon or two of fucking veterans and put them to work, like, let us know what it is.
Here it is. Hey, go out and buy his fucking book, people. Like, this guy has put in a ton of work. He has written a really great book with the help of a great psychologist. Go out there and support. You know, this is what, you know, Bitcoin has to be about, is supporting people in this network. I don't know if you take Bitcoin for it and on any other platforms or anything, but go out there to Amazon if not, and buy it on whatever, you know, medium you like. If you're like me, I love learning through audiobook. If you love to read, you know, maybe actually get something to put on a bookshelf so that if things go bad, you got something to carry on, you know, things like that.
So I will say this, more than helping me out, this book, if you think you're driven, if you are ADHD, or you know somebody that is like that, this book will help you. I don't know how many people I've talked to that, you know, they cried when they read the book because it's them and it doesn't explain, that they've never had somebody explain it so well and what to do about it. That was the biggest piece, we put into this because, we wanted guys to do something with their ADHD, go out and conquer, right? Not just think that they're broken. and find that wolf pack and get out there and just freaking embrace your ADHD, you know?
I love that.
Get after it.
Yep.
Hell yeah. Jordan, you might get your second copy for me for Christmas, man. Like, just just because I know how much ADHD you have.
It better be signed by Randy.
So I will say this. We put a lot of research into this book. One of the research pieces we did was pairing long range shooting and meditation. I borrowed this concept from a Japanese art called Kudo, which is you meditate and then you shoot an arrow. Well, I paired it with long range shooting out to 1,000 yards. You would meditate, literally sit on the meditation cushion, get everything out of your mind, not worry about the shot, just get down and just get on the shot and shoot. And we were having guys who have never shot a gun, guys and girls. They were shooting targets out to 1,000 yards, you know, consistently. And we were having team guys come out and they were like, how are you doing this? And I was like, when you begin to empty the mind and actually focus your skill, your hunter skills without worrying about the outcome, it's awesome. So, you know, we worked with a lot of pro athletes doing this one too. Actually brought out a bunch of old team guys, and they worked through a lot of their PTSD and stuff like that.
In the book, there was a story of this, I think she was Australian Olympian athlete. Who shot four? They were doing this meditation exercise, and she had never really shot before. She had gotten like trained up on it right beforehand. She shot maybe 25 rounds down range, and she was going up against a SEAL guy who, confirm or deny it, Randy, I think they used a different name, but I'm just wondering if it was you. But
that was
against the SEAL guy who had like hundreds of thousands of rounds, you know, down a barrel of a gun. And she beat him four out of five, and he was three out of five. Yeah. And it was like, oh, that's how much this process can work if you're focused and you use this energy correctly. Because there are certain mindsets among us who are just so driven that they want to be experts. They might be an expert in a completely different field, but then they come into this other field and they're like, tell me everything you know. And something that some of us might have trained for 10,000 hours on, they're just so into, like, give me the info dump. Okay, got it. They take it all in and they just exercise it. It's amazing. It was pretty wild.
I'm excited. I gotta tell you, I started listening to it after Jordan, you started like talking about his book earlier. And one thing I do recommend for people that do have ADD, because I am definitely one of you guys, is having both the physical and the audio to listen to. Because like, I like to sit down and read, but then there are like, between the combination of ADD and just having like a busy lifestyle, it's like, oh damn, I gotta go like do something else. And like, you don't want to stop reading it, right? So like, just pop the Audible on, and most of us already have an Amazon account anyway. And it just helps Randy out.
Yeah. I like, my goal right now is to sit down and read Lynn Alden's Broken Money. And I'm like, it's right behind me. I'm like a quarter of the way into it, but then I have to take time out to sit down and read a book. And today I was like, I got shit to do. We're about to talk to Randy. I'm gonna listen to this shit. And I'm like, all right, if I read it at one speed, it'll take me 7 hours. If I read it 1.5 speeds, I can get this done in like 5.5 hours. And that's about how busy I'm going to be today. And so I just had Randy information just being pumped into my brain while I was not care of business.
Give us those sound effects again.
I love it.
I couldn't do it again if I tried.
What do you got, Alex?
I just want to thank Randy for being here, man. This has been really cool. I suspect, yeah. I mean, you come across to me as a super humble guy. I suspect there's a lot more in that head of yours that we could probably extract over time. And so I think we should probably do this again sometime in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. I have weird, varied interests that we didn't even get to. So that sounds weird. That sounds bad. But
no. Oh, no, yeah. Bitcoin, I'm going to superimpose that right after Shane's comment that he made earlier about certain age groups.
Jordan doesn't show up, and then he makes sure that nobody else does. So I guess we'll start wrapping this up. I want to thank, first and foremost, our guest, Randy Kelly. If you haven't heard so far, you're just coming in, he is the author of Driven, and it is an outstanding book from what I understand and from what I can glean from this conversation. He has a wealth and depth and breadth of knowledge on so many things that I think the male in our species, especially here in America, is missing right now. There is something to be said for a guy who's delved down the rabbit hole of ADHD in a culture that stigmatizes it, that pushes it to the bottom, that medicates it, that secludes it. And when you really break it down and you start to look at, you know, who we are as a people, you know, this is just the curious, natural, I think really, really talented, if you let them explore their passion, everyday male. And I think of it, you know, I'm thinking about my boys that I have, like, that are homeschooled, that would not do well at all in a public education or indoctrination environment. To have guys that have done a deep dive and published that for us to consume, I think is a great gift. I think it is, you know, I hate the word empowerment. I fucking hate that word, but I think, so I'm not going to use it. I think this is a great gift to really shove it right back down the throats of all these people that talk about toxic masculinity. I think it's, you know, something that you can pour into yourself, into others that are around you that, you know, obviously love doing things that are not, you know, prescribed by the mainstream media. And I think that's something that's really powerful that's been missing in our society for a long time. So Randy, I commend you for God knows all of your efforts, especially giving this back to, I think, just males in our society. And, you know, to be able to be here and talking with you, you got an open invite anytime you want to come back. I got an open invite for you down here in North Georgia. If you ever want to come bow hunt, man, I've got about 2,000 acres out here that has got, you know, just critters crawling, waiting to be eaten. You know what I mean? So from all of us here at Bitcoin Vets, we are we're really appreciative of everybody that's showing up, that's showing out, that's working their freaking asses off, that is just putting together, you know, this amazing movement. Behind the scenes, a lot of you guys don't know what's happening, but there is a literal army of guys that are getting together, that are standing up, that are creating all sorts of memes and merchandise and getting together, putting together citadels, talking about Bitcoin. So if there is something that you need, maybe tap into this group. Maybe, you know, contact myself, Jordan, Alex, Mike. This is we've got more resources than we know what to do with at this point, and this is growing a life.
Really true.
So if you're a person of action and you want to do something, get on the mission. Go out there, share this. Bring somebody.
Let's go.
Bring a drink. Bring a buddy. Bring a non-veteran to this space and expose them to what real masculinity is, what real good times are, people who are in good standing with their communities that are of, you know, no reproach. And I think you're going to find something that is extremely different from what's going on out there in the rest of the world. But from the rest of us here at Bitcoin Veterans, every Wednesday night, 7 p.m. You can catch us here. Like, smash, all that fun stuff on the subscribe buttons. Get notifications. And we'll see you back here next week. Love you, goons. Thanks for hanging out again. Until next week, we will see you then. Peace.
I think we're taking fire. We're taking fire?